Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website or cover page for your portfolio, business, or online store. Enter the offer code NSS and get 10% off. Squarespace, you should. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/NSS and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/NSS.
Live from Silicon Valley Comic-Con, a video game based on real life, making friends with LG G5, and our ultimate virtual reality gaming machine finally gets sound. Live from the Twit Brick House in beautiful downtown Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers!
Hello, Florence Ion.
Hello, Leo Laporte.
From All About Android fame. Great to have you. And also, we want to say thank you to Jared from Castle Rock, Colorado. Which Star Wars is that shirt from? The original?
Episode 4.
Very nice. Very fancy. Thank you, Jared, for a good show open. This is episode 45. You know, we're gonna, in a couple of months, this will be a one-year-old show. We got to have a party for this. And they said it wouldn't last. Episode 45 for March 19th, 2016. So Florence has brought us something very exciting
for the
show later. Brand new.
It's
Nobody's
beautiful.
Seen this. And we've
been
waiting.
It's so brand new. It's not even the final product yet.
I love it. A prototype. Also, Silicon Valley is having its first Comic-Con. Waz put the money up for this.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go down there and say hi to Padre. He's live. They'll also have a roundup from this week's Game Developers Conference. He and OMG Chad Johnson covered that for us. Speaking of games, a indie award-winning game, kind of heavy, called That Dragon Cancer. The creators of the video game and the family that inspired it coming up. A sound card in our Overgum. And let's see, we're also going to continue our international trend with a call from France, Florence Ion. But first, let's go to Comic-Con. I think Father Robert Ballasaire is standing by. Robert?
Leo, Flo, thank you so very much. We are here at the Silicon Valley Comic-Con in San Jose, California, for the very first ever con in the Silicon Valley, the Bay Area. Now, this con is absolutely packed. This was not what we expected. This is a first-year con. Normally, it takes time for them to gather speed. But because of the star power of Waz and because of the star power of Stan Lee, this is packed from top to bottom. Now, over the last couple of hours, we've seen a little bit of everything that represents the culture of Comic-Con. Yeah, we've seen our share of Jedis and Stormtroopers and the characters that you know and love from video games. In fact, that's one of my favorite aspects of a Comic-Con. If you are a geek, if you live the geek lifestyle, you get to walk around the floor and you find characters that maybe you recognize from an obscure movie, an obscure game, and it gives you just that extra warm fuzzy. Now, it's not all about fuzzies. We've seen technology make the jump from the Game Developers Conference here to Silicon Valley Comic Con. In fact, right over there, right behind us, is the Virtual Reality Pavilion, where they have several designers who, well, they take their inspiration from comics and from comic book movies, have turned that experience into VR content. And that's what we're really looking for. Also, Google is in that corner with their new offering of shorts, animated shorts mostly, for VR headsets. So if you have a VR headset, be it Google Cardboard or Samsung VR or even the upcoming PlayStation VR, know that Google's working hard to make sure you have something to watch. Now, beyond that, Comic-Con really is about star power. And towards the back of the hall, we will have everyone from William Shatner to Andy Weir to Adam Savage to the cast of Firefly, Back to the Future. So this really is an all-you-can-eat geek buffet. I can't tell you enough what it's like to be standing on the floor. I think the people who are watching right now need to check out Twit's Silicon Valley Comic Con special, because there you will see, as the poet wrote, that a road diverged at Comic Con, and I took the one less traveled by an Ewok, a Jedi, and a Wookiee. I'm Father Robert Ballas here from the Silicon Valley Comic Con. Back to you, Leo and Flo, in the studio.
I like Robert's cosplay there. I think he looks like Father Nemo from, you know, like 20,000 Priests Under the Sea or something. I don't know exactly what he's up to. Have you ever done cosplay?
Yes, I have.
Okay, fess up. Who were you?
Gaming cosplay. I did American McGee's Alice.
Oh, I love that game.
Yeah. And this was many years ago.
Did you have blood dripping down? I mean,
no, I had
she
blood over
vicious.
The apron. I sewed the dress on my own. I had my ex-boyfriend's mother help me. It was quite a feat.
What a great game that was.
It was such a great game.
It was, was it only PC? I can't remember. I think it was.
I do not remember. They had a sequel that was not.
It was kind of like a fantasy role-playing game.
Yeah.
You were Alice. No, were you Alice?
Yes.
You were.
Yeah.
She went crazy. And Wonderland was nuts.
Yeah.
But there was puzzles. It was really,
really,
was really wonderful.
Good.
American
really
McGee
good.
Really did a great job with that. I think every once in a while I hear about people saying, oh, we should get that back, or we should do another sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Wow, that was a fun memory. See, okay, I can go for dressing up as Alice. I would have been the Mad Hatter on that one. So another big event in our news topics. Monday, Apple have its event. Loop us in. Pun there, of course, because it's going to come from the Apple campus on one infinite loop.
Yes.
But somebody pointed out to me that the Milanese Loop is one of their bands.
Mm-hmm.
And we think they're going to announce new bands, including a Black Milanese Loop. So that might be where the pun comes from. Somebody else speculated, you know, when they say in the loop, maybe they're talking about bands with more sensors in the bands. We were talking before the show about fitness bands.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you wear?
The HTC band from Under Armour.
Is it good?
It is very good I use it because it tracks yoga. It's like one of the few bands that tracks yoga.
What does it track?
Heart rate and how many calories I've burned, which is pretty much
the
thing I care about.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
A good heart rate monitor is really the most, you know, all of these do steps about the same. It's a heart rate monitor you're looking for. I'm wearing the Fitbit Blaze. Is that what this is? I think so. And this, I like this a lot too. Fitbit is the king of this. And they continue to do, I think, pretty good things. This one has an excellent real-time heart rate monitor. One of the problems with a lot of these is when you really start exercising, they get inaccurate. But not these. Earlier Fitbits and Android Wear. Apple Watch is pretty accurate, I found, with heart rate. Heart rate accuracy is important. And this has 5-day battery life, which is nice. I'm sure the HTC does, too.
Oh, yes. It lasts a little over a week.
Yeah. Also, the day after the Apple announcement, the court is going to rule on the DOJ versus Apple case. I expect the reason Apple moved that announcement to the day before is Tim Cook wanted one last chance at a bully pulpit to spend 10 minutes making their case. And I think they have a very strong case. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once the judge rules, I think Apple's going to, well, I don't know what's going to happen. I suspect Apple will lose. No matter who wins or who loses, it will get appealed. And I think it'll go all the way to the Supreme Court. And ultimately, Congress is going to have to decide. I read a really good article by an attorney who covers these subjects, who pointed out that CALEA, the Law Enforcement Assistance Act that was written in the 90s that forced telecom companies to cooperate with law enforcement in wiretaps, things like that, also has a clause that says no telecommunications company shall be required to write custom software to help law enforcement. So it may very well be that the judge will simply say, you know what, CALEA makes this illegal, you don't have to do it. The other thing I saw, which I think is fascinating, is that there's some speculation that Apple programmers, if asked to rewrite iPhone firmware for the FBI, would just walk off the job and say, yeah, no, I don't think so.
Who can fault them?
And what are they going to do if that happens? I mean, there's a very small number of people who know how to do this stuff well. Here's what I suspect would happen if that happened, is that that law enforcement would say, all right, then give us the source code and let us do it. And, you know, there's evidence that they've asked for this before and that even some tech companies have handed over source code for their firmware. So that's a very dangerous precedent, and I hope that they don't succeed in that. I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen. It's fascinating. We'll be watching with interest on Tuesday.
It is. I'm getting my worried face.
Are you?
Yes.
Are you worried?
You know, know, a little bit. It's been a lot in the news lately, and it's starting to go into mainstream news as well. It's not just between us techies.
You know, well, that's great, and that's what Tim Cook wanted. I think Tim Cook wanted and succeeded to bring this to the national stage and say, let's discuss. And, of course, all the presidential candidates have talked about it at this point. In every case, though, unfortunately, they've ruled, they've held with law enforcement, I think. Even President Obama, who said at South by Southwest last week, don't fetishize your phones, give us the information. I was very disappointed in that. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Do you use any sort of encrypted technology on your phones?
Like I probably should not admit to this, that admit to the fact that I don't really. The most I do is the fingerprint unlock and passcode, and I encrypt my Android phones.
Briefly, I thought, oh, I should turn off iCloud backup on my iPhone because we know that Apple has access to that and will hand it over. Then I thought, that's so convenient. I don't care. I think most people, that's kind
of the reaction. That's how I feel about Google. That's how I feel about Google in the Android world.
It's convenient.
It's so convenient.
I don't want to have a long password every time I try to use my
phone. Price you pay for convenience, though.
Yeah, that's fine. I think that's all the news. Let's go to our first call for help.
I'm traveling from France with four of my friends, one of which is 7 years old. And we're going to be traveling a lot in the car. So I want to find an unlocked Wi-Fi hotspot that I can use during our travels and possibly use back when I'm here in France. I looked up from the email that I sent you, I looked up, you know, on Amazon and CNET and the best of this and that and everything. And there were some Huawei things, you know, with 65 different numbers, but I've never bought one before. I'm pretty tech savvy. I consider myself, I hope I am. But, I was wondering if anybody has any ideas or had any experience with the same, you know, the same issue or the same problem with a Wi-Fi hotspot, specifically for maybe the cars and the hotels while we're on our voyage.
Have a great voyage. So this is complicated because Dorothy does not live in the States. She lives in France.
Yes.
And she's traveling to other parts of Europe.
Yes.
You were just in Spain, right?
I was. Yes, so I have a couple of methods. One method is to just go on eBay and buy a SIM card from somebody in the country that you're going to. Yes.
Like a used SIM card?
A brand new SIM card, and then I will set it up with my own account, and then I pop it into an unlocked Moto G, which I highly recommend for anybody who's looking for a great travel Android phone. It's, I mean, for now, we'll see what happens with the whole Motorola Lenovo thing in the future. But for now, the Moto G, definitely a good choice for unlocked phone. Now, there's also such things as travel hotspots. There's one called SkyRoam from TEP Wireless. It has unlimited data for five devices for a flat daily fee, although
like that.
It will throttle you after 800 megabytes, which is kind of a bummer. That's kind of also why I would opt to go through eBay and buy a SIM card. No throttling. Another company that rents out international hotspots and gets good reviews is called XCOM Global. Leo, I know you have a link, a source that you
This is what
like.
I always send people to from the radio show. It's it's a wiki called Prepaid with Data, prepaidwithdata.wikia.com. You could just search for it. This isn't for hotspots particularly. It's really just about international roaming by country, so you could actually look at the country you're going to. There's a couple of things you got to keep in mind. First of all, you need a phone that's going to have the right kinds of radios for that country. So that is potentially problematic. It's different if you're living in the States going to Spain. Probably anything you can use in France is going to work just fine in the EU. In fact, the latest thing, and I guess it's not in effect yet, or Dorothy would have known, but starting soon, the EU has changed the regulations, and all EU carriers are supposed to provide free roaming
the EU. That's right.
Which would eliminate this issue entirely because you could use your phone as a hotspot, and it would be the same cost as you would have in France, no matter where you are in the EU. But until then, Prepaid with Data lets you go to, here I am, for instance, in Spain. You see there's Movistar, Vodafone, Orange, and Yoigo. And so these will tell you the availability. They even talk about the frequencies, the costs. It's very, very handy to compare. So you can do comparison shopping. Now, this is focused on SIMs, but in many cases, there are Wi-Fi hotspots you can buy. And they'll talk about the availability of those. When we were in London last year, we went and we just bought, we rented a card mm-hmm. from Three, which is a carrier in London. It was, I think it was 30 euros for unlimited data per month.
That's awesome.
And, you know, it allows you to have your, you know, several devices. So I would just carry it with me in my pocket, and both of our smartphones were on it. We were in the hotel. When you're in a hotel or coffee shop, of course, you got Wi-Fi.
You have Wi-Fi, absolutely.
And that's so available. Yes. So did you find in Barcelona it was everywhere?
No.
No.
Unfortunately. It's not as prevalent in Barcelona. I actually found Wi-Fi to be more prevalent in countries like Germany and London,
right.
Or England, I should say. But, Dorothy, if you're looking at any of the carriers and trying to decide who to go with, I've had great success with Vodafone, Orange, and in Germany I use Blau.de.
Okay.
They're a pay-as-you-go carrier.
Now, for Americans, so. If they have T-Mobile or Sprint, it's interesting. T-Mobile started this. Sprint is following
yes.
suit. They now have travel plans that are
really
attractive. T-Mobile gives you unlimited texting, which mm-hmm. may be the single most important thing, so you can stay in touch with your friends, mm-hmm. you can get help, you could, you know, that is great. Plus 20 cents a minute phone calls to most countries. And then the data is free, but it's slow. It was
yes,
it 2G?
Very, so I have Verizon, so when I go overseas, that's why I'm always buying SIM cards from my friend on eBay. I have one friend. But my coworkers with T-Mobile, they said it was very...
It's slow.
My data was always whipping fast.
They send you text messages every day
yes.
saying, you know, you could get 3G for, you know...
Yeah.
Sprint has, I think, an even better plan. My son's in Barcelona for his junior year. And he said, send me a Sprint phone because everybody's using Sprint here. When you're traveling, if you're in included destinations, free unlimited talk, text, and then this is great. Every month you get a gigabyte of high-speed data, 4G or LTE data. Once you use that up, then you step down to the 2G, 3G, T-Mobile style speed. But a gigabyte, if you're judicious, is actually probably enough, especially if you're only there for a few weeks. It's going to be great. I think this is a great solution. And I have to say, I love the competition. Sprint saw T-Mobile doing this, and they said, well, we're going to beat you.
Yes, host Sprint.
The problem is Sprint in the U.S. isn't so great.
You know what? You said it, but I was thinking it. So
yeah. It really depends where you are. There are some areas. If you're in Kansas City, Sprint's amazing.
Exactly.
It really works great.
But if you're in the Bay Area, Sprint is awful.
Not so much. Do you use Google Fi? Because Fi gives you a choice of T-Mobile and Sprint.
I tried. I could not get the SIM card set up, so I gave up. And I'm a sucker for Verizon. I complain about them all the time because they are just...
Sucker might be the word
with
when you
low wear, but mm-hmm. Stockholm syndrome. That's what I have going on with Verizon right now.
This phone, the 7, is on S7 is on T-Mobile, but I have the Nexus 6P on Fi. Fi is a great deal, and that's the phone I travel with.
Yeah.
When we go to Europe, that's the phone I'm going to bring with
me. There were people using Fi when we were at MWC.
Sure, works great. So there's some good choices, but prepaid with data is a really great site for just doing the research. And if you're an American traveling to Europe, I think look at T-Mobile or Sprint and maybe even buy a pay-as-you-go plan from one of them.
Definitely don't go through Verizon. It's very expensive.
Yeah, they don't have a good deal.
It's very expensive.
It's really kind of shocking. Maybe this will put some pressure on them. Dorothy, it was great to hear from you. Thank you. From Clermont-Ferrand, France. If you want to, who's on the show next week? Pardon me?
Aaron
Newcomb's going to be joining us. Oh, we got some maker questions maybe. If you got a maker question, here's how you could be on the show anytime.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
We're going to go to GDC in just a little bit, and a visit from old friend Chad Johnson. OMG Chad will join Father Robert in his coverage of GDC, the virtual reality. Which one are you going to get? Vive, Oculus, PlayStation 4?
I do not want to build a PC for the Vive,
you
but
saw
I
what
did
we had
the
to
Vive.
Do.
Yeah. I did the Vive demo. It was life-changing for me.
People are saying that. I haven't tried it yet.
It completely warped my brain. Right after I did the first demo last year that I did at MWC, right after I exited the little box that they put me in, I had to come down from it for a second. My brain was still stuck in this alternate reality. It's an alternate reality. I don't even want to call it virtual because I think it's a different experience than what you would get on Gear VR.
There's a game, and I can't remember if it's Oculus Rift or Vive. No, I think it's PlayStation VR that everybody's talking about. Well, we'll see if Father Robert and Chad talk about it, because, of course, the big story from the Game Developer Conference.
Yes, it was PlayStation.
PlayStation.
Good on you, Sony.
Yeah.
Good on
they
you.
They may be the one. They may end up winning it all. And here I am with a $5,000 Ultimate VR gaming machine. We're going to add a sound card to that in just a
It'll
little
bit. It'll be worth it, you know, alternate realities.
It's gaming. Gaming's fun.
Yeah. It is.
Gaming's fun. Who doesn't love gaming? Our show today brought to you by Squarespace, the place I make my website, leoville.com. You know, I have been through every blogging platform there is, most recently WordPress, and I finally gave up when I realized I was spending more time fixing security flaws in WordPress than I was actually blogging. It was like I was on that site more just to say, oh, is there an update? Oh, is there an update? And then I said, I got to do better. I got to do Squarespace. How many years have I been doing ads for Squarespace? We've used it for our business. We've used it for other sites, but I finally moved to Leoville, and I'm so happy. Leoville.com. I started with the Squarespace cover page, which makes it very easy to make a page where it just, this is my cover page, where it just shows images. It shows your other social media, my Instagram, my YouTube. It's got links to my blog. Everything's there. Very easy way to start. And then I added the blog and the calendar. And pretty soon I'm going, this is the best blogging platform ever. Whether you're a designer, a photographer, a filmmaker, it's very visual for writers, bands, musicians. You're going to love Squarespace. It's very easy to put your tour schedule up there. You're to sell. Every Squarespace site has e-commerce, so you can sell your music on Squarespace. If you're a photographer, you'll love the Portfolio app, which allows you to show clients pictures from your Squarespace site on your iPad. I can go on and on. Every site's designed by the best designers and this is key, the best engineers. They give you those templates. Squarespace does the hosting. Between the two, you're going to get a site that never goes down, that is mobile responsive, looks great on any size screen, that has e-commerce built in. In fact, as far as I am concerned, Squarespace is the only provider that lets you do e-commerce without like looking like it's just an add-on, an afterthought, a bag hung off the side of your site. Your e-commerce looks exactly like your site because it's integrated into the template. It's there. With an annual purchase, you get a free custom domain. They've got great 24/7 support. Look, why are you listening to me? Go to squarespace.com. Click the Get Started button for free. You can create a site. You can even import some of your data, see what it looks like. Play with the templates. The data is separate from the template, so you can put your data in there and try every different template, one after the other. They're so easy to customize. And then if you decide, yeah, you know what, Leo's right. And by the way, I understand if it's taken you a while. It took me a while. But this is the time. 10% off when you use the offer code NSS. 10% off when you buy at squarespace.com. And by the way, you'll be showing your support for the new screensavers. And we like that. Squarespace! You should! I wish somebody had hit me on the head and said, why are you not doing this? Padre and OMG Chad, they were at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco. By all reports, the best GDC ever. Let's take a look.
Hey, Leo, it's Padre and Chad here at the Game Developer Conference 2016 in San Francisco, and we wanted to give you our list of top five cool things that we found here at GDC. Chad, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, so I think that number five, I would say the Indie Game Pavilion.
Yes.
It was great to see that they were really focusing on indie games, and we saw some really cool ones. Super Hot.
Yeah.
Keep Talking, Nobody Explodes.
Of course, we love that on the Twit TV network.
Absolutely. So it was really cool to really get a sense of the indie games. Some have been out for a while. Some I hadn't seen Super Hot, the actual build. And I thought that whole area really deserved a mention.
Absolutely. I think that's got to be the top five. For me, I think number four has to be Project Tango from Google. Again, I love VR. VR is great, and some of the products here were fantastic, but I am a big proponent of augmented reality. If you can take a piece of tech and overlay a digital layer on top of real life so that I can get a bit of more information, that's great. Now, here at GDC, Google showed off gaming, but just as easily, with the exact same tech, you could overlay someone's personal information.
Totally.
You could overlay...
Clothes.
Clothes. A rack of servers. So I think AR is one of the unsung heroes of GDC 2016.
I completely agree. Yeah. Now, what would we say coming in at number three?
Number three, you know what? I'm going to give that to HTC, the Vive,
with the Star Wars demo. Who knows if it's going to be a product? In fact, it probably won't end up being a product. But there's something visceral.
Having a lightsaber.
Having a lightsaber.
You get a real lightsaber. A virtual lightsaber. A really virtual,
beautiful lightsaber. We have seen games in the past that have done lightsaber combat,
right.
like the Wii. But this was one that it actually felt like it was stuck, like the control system was down, like they had the VR down hammered. So, yeah, for me, it's got to be HTC Vibe and Star Wars.
Okay, number two, I'm going to take this one. It has to be the Samsung Gear VR Minecraft Pocket Edition virtual reality experience. It's a really long title, but the really cool thing about, now, a little while ago, they released the Windows 10 edition of virtual reality Minecraft, but everybody plays Pocket Edition. No one's playing Windows 10 edition of Minecraft. So seeing that on a Samsung phone using the Gear VR blew me away that I could have such a tangible VR experience using just a phone and a $100 peripheral to see your Pocket Edition worlds. And I think people are really going to love playing the worlds that they've created on their phones and seeing the perspective of VR in front of them.
You know what I really like about that story is when we heard about Oculus and Facebook and all the goings on, that was the first thing that jumped into people's mind. Like, oh, VR Minecraft. And now we're actually starting to see it, and I think people are, well, they're going to be happy with the results.
I agree.
Now, before we get to our number one, the number one cool thing here at GDC 2016, let's do some honorable mentions. For me, I tend to be a bit more on the productive side. I really like the Wacom tablet. They've got their new series out there. It still is the best way to do any sort of modeling. Now, they were showing off their tools to do 3D modeling. In fact, they had an artist who was creating sort of an alien sculpture.
Alien face, yeah. It was crazy.
And then they teamed up with Formlab so that they could 3D print. They could turn that imagined monster into something real. For me, that's the kind of tool I love to see. I love to see, yes, the games are great. The VR headsets are great. But show me the tools that can create the objects that go into that world. I'm sold.
What makes it tick? Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely love that. For me, my honorable mention would have to be the licking game. lick the plant. What?
Planet Licker.
That game was just so off the wall. It was part of the alt control at GDC. Yeah. I mean, it was just so crazy to experience something where you're licking a controller in order to move a creature around so that he could eat and lick planets himself. It was just too absurd, and it has to get an honorable mention from me.
It really does. It's one of those things where it will never see the light of day. It will never become a product. In fact, I can't see that controller ever being used again.
Could you imagine you walk into your local grocery store and they have planet licker refills? I don't think that's possible.
I'm glad that we saw it.
Yeah, absolutely. Number one.
Well, I think we're both in agreement about this.
We are.
Easily, number one, the story. The cool thing from GDC 2016 has to be
PlayStation VR.
Yeah.
PlayStation VR really stole the show with the fact that its price point is inexpensive.
$399.
Are you kidding me? You're not even, like, the whole story doesn't end there. Because at $399, your companion computer that's going to render all of that is a console. It's really inexpensive. You may even already own one. You don't have to upgrade your computer. You don't have to buy an Oculus or HTC ready rig that will be able to render the video going to the headset. The least expensive Oculus PC is like $1,000.
Yep.
Or more. So I really think that the Sony the PlayStation VR really did steal the show.
It did.
Being able to play it and see it, and the hardware is great. The software will hopefully be amazing. You know, Sony makes games, PlayStation makes games. So, yeah, that was my experience with it. I mean, do you agree?
I absolutely agree. And you know, the real fun part about that story is there are going to be people who are hardcore, diehard HTC Vive or Oculus Rift fans, and I get that. Those are great pieces of technology, and those will be the people who want to tinker with the next great desktop. There's a whole part of this VR potential audience that they don't want to build a PC, or they don't want to buy a $1,500, $2,000 PC.
They don't want to hack it.
They don't want to hack it. But now that they've got a PlayStation 4 and they can buy a $399 companion piece for the headset and a $69 camera and maybe an $80 move controllers.
Most of which you can get used.
Exactly. And have an incredibly competent. In fact, I put it right up there with the Vive and with the Oculus Rift.
Totally.
That's, again, a game changer.
It really is. Yeah.
A game changer.
Thanks for making it a reality,
Absolutely. Sony.
Yeah.
I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
I'm Chad Johnson.
And Leo, you've got our top five. Back to you in the studio.
I think that some of those are weird, but I agree with the number one, right, is the Sony PlayStation.
Yes, yeah. But the licking thing was weird.
It's really
strange. I can't get over that.
It looked like that every player got his own little ice cream treat, right? So you weren't licking somebody else's. You know, it's an interesting statistic. NVIDIA estimates that worldwide there are only about 13 million PCs that have the oomph to play Oculus games. I would suggest it's probably the same for Vive, you know. There's 38 million PlayStation 4s out there. So really, when you look at it, when we come to the end of 2016, who's going to have the most VR headsets installed?
Sony.
It's going to be Sony.
Although,
the other thing I would point out is that a lot of people bought the PlayStation 4 because it was $100 cheaper than the Xbox One. Those people are not going to spend $400 on VR helmets, right? They're the cheapskates. So the question is, how many of the Sony people bought it because it was cheap versus because it was good?
Mm-hmm.
Which do you use?
Well, we have an X-Bone, but it just kind of sits dormant.
I like my
X-Bone.
Because
we're mostly mobile players and PC users, so that's where we get our fun.
I use my Xbox One for it's how I watch TV, which is a little bit frustrating because a lot of times I sit down and watch TV and it says, oh, by the way, before you watch TV, you've got a gigabyte upgrade to download and install.
Yes, that's why we stopped using it. We just
it's
use
a little
the Roku
frustrating.
Now. That's fine.
It's like House of Cards is just going to have to wait. And it does not win me fans in my house, I might add. but I think it's really it's fun for games. I really love the games on it. I can't wait to. We'll have a Vive and we'll have an Oculus. You can try it here. Do you get nauseous?
I did get nauseous from Google Cardboard.
Yeah.
Of all the things.
Yeah.
Google Cardboard made me very nauseous.
Every time I've used an Oculus, I've gotten a little queasy.
You don't want to do it
and
after eating.
That one time we had an Oculus where I had hand things and I was moving around a lot. I got really queasy. I had to stop and I sit down and fan myself. Anyway, thank you, Chad. And it's great to see Chad Johnson again and Father Robert for that report. Now, do we want to do this here? Okay, because Flo has brought us something very exciting.
I have. I brought a little present.
I'm so excited. Now, you and I both have Galaxy S7s. Both of ours have been cracked. Yours is scratched,
mine's is scratched up, yes.
I just saw on Twitter that Jason Howell has already smashed his S7.
Yes.
I mean, badly on the front.
Yeah.
This thing is the most vulnerable little phone ever. Look at the damage. Poor guy. He just got it. So our advice, strong advice, if you're going to use a Galaxy S7, whether it's the edge or the rather, is buy a case.
Immediately.
I just got my cases, so now I don't have to worry. I can just drop it. It makes you nervous when I do
it
that.
It does. It actually, I'm getting a little nervous right now.
But that, as much as that looks like a Galaxy S7, is something else.
This is the pre-production version of the LG G5, which is LG's new flagship. And they didn't actually give us a release date, but B&H will have this on sale April 1st. So I'm assuming April Fool's is when this is going on sale.
Will that be unlocked at B&H? Will it be a carrier?
I do not know.
Because that's one thing
details.
With the Galaxy S7. You have to buy it from a U.S. carrier.
Yeah, which is a total bummer.
Yeah, and there's no unlocked version. So size-wise, it's about the same, right? And it's the Snapdragon 820, so it's the same processor.
Yes.
4 gigs of RAM?
Yes. And a 2800 milliamp battery pack that lasts just as long as the GS7's 3000 milliamp.
No.
At least that was how much our pre-production battery tests.
Now, the Edge has a 3600 milliamp.
Yes.
I've been very happy. Yeah. You have an Edge, right?
Yes.
I've been very happy with the life on the Edge.
It lasts about an hour and a half longer than the GS7, or it did in our PC Mark and Geekbench
But this
tests.
Might, but if this does as well as the S7, that might be pretty good. But everybody, though, the thing that people are most interested in is, and there's, oh, by the way, the volume buttons no longer on the back.
Thank goodness.
They put
Thank
them
you,
in a
LG.
Normal place. But that's where the fingerprint reader is. Mm-hmm. And notice there's no on-off switch. That's also the on-off switch,
It's super fast. It's just as fast as a 6P.
Well, so you don't need an on-off switch. I think for legal reasons, they have to have technically an on-off switch.
So that you can restart it if you need to. You hold down on it.
But I think that that's fine, isn't it?
Oh, it's lovely. I love it.
And then the other thing is the friends.
Yes. Now,
so this is the, by the way, people say, well, you're going to have an add-on module. Is this going to be loose? It's not loose, is it?
Not loose at all.
And there's the, it's a flush button, so it's not going to get accidentally pushed. You push that, and then this is wild. Look at that.
Yes.
Wasn't hard to get out either.
Nope. But now try and take the battery out.
Oh,
it's a bit of a...
Yeah, see, I feel like I'm going to break it.
But this is a good thing because it ensures that the battery stays in.
Should I pull it straight? Is there a release?
You kind of want to...
Rock it?
Jigger it, side to side like that.
That's an interesting connector.
Yeah. Okay. That's how it connects. Now, thus far, there are only two models that will be available at launch, which is one from Bang & Olufsen, which enables hi-fi sound.
These are the so-called friends?
Yes, I'm sorry. So they're called the LG Friends.
That's so
they're
so
LG's
funny.
Friends.
Oh, I broke it.
Meh. It's like Lego.
So this is how it comes.
Yes, it comes just like
this. And you would be able to buy separate batteries, right? So you could have it's replaceable.
They have
battery.
Not. They are replaceable, but they have not mentioned anything about buying batteries yet. I'm sure they'll be aftermarket.
They have in the past.
Yeah. I'm sure that'll come through.
And does the SIM card go in here, or is there? No, there's a normal SIM slot.
Yes.
This is Verizon. So there it is. Okay,
yes.
So
this is actually the Korean variant. Okay. This doesn't even work here.
And this uses an SD card, but not adopted. Mm-hmm, SD storage, unfortunately.
Yep. And the other friend is a camera controller. So it has physical camera controls on it, so you could hold that way, easily zoom in and out. You have a shutter button. You have a quick button to take video. And it adds an extra, I hope I'm doing the math right, 1,200 milliamp battery.
Oh,
so you have 4,000 milliamp instead of 2,800.
Oh, I like that.
Which is great if you're shooting all day, if you know, you're on vacation and you need
battery life to me is a big issue, I think.
Heck yeah, absolutely.
And there are going to be other friends. In fact, they're having a Friends Developer Conference.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
This week, I think. Okay, so this is nice. By the way, I like the color. What do they call that color?
Pink? I'm not entirely sure.
Not rose gold?
This is definitely not a rose. This is definitely straight up pastel pink, and I love it. But you know what? The other two colors, I actually forgot what they were. But I remember they looked nice.
This matches your nails perfectly. Was that an accident?
Actually... It was.
That's
an accident,
beautiful.
But they do match.
No, I like this. It's subtle. It's not pink.
Absolutely.
It's pretty.
Absolutely.
It's very nice. And I love how this looks. The design is very nice. And it's got that liquidy screen curve there.
Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing about this is it's a modular phone. And it's kind of the first modular phone that we're seeing on the market. I mean, I know Google had Project Ara that they were having developers conferences for and things of the sort.
Whatever happened to that?
I have no idea what's happened to it. We haven't really heard much about that from Google. Typically in January, we would have had a developers conference, but we didn't have one this year.
They were supposed to sell them in Puerto Rico.
They were supposed to start in Puerto Rico. Haven't really heard much about that. So this is pretty much like the first, I would say, consumer...
Since the Pfizer.
Oh, yes.
The Pfizer.
Yes. I totally forgot about that little guy. It's the first consumer available iteration of a modular phone. And I am very curious to see how the public is going to accept something like this.
I love it that LG's trying stuff. Because, frankly, we're kind of at peak phone, right?
Yes.
There's not a lot you can do
that's
different.
Yes.
You haven't had it long enough to try the camera and all the other stuff. This is
No.
You know, it's pre-production.
Yeah. So. My boss was using it mostly for the week because he's an LG user. Boss gets first pick.
Boss gets first pick.
He does. So this weekend, I'm going to take it out for more of a stroll. But also, it's pre-production. So who knows? We'll get our final review unit in sometime next week or so.
And how is the software? Is there a lot of LG junk on that?
It's a sore spot for me.
You like pure Android.
I like pure Android, but I understand the reason that we have skinned versions. And in some cases, I will suggest a skinned version to somebody, for instance, on a Samsung phone. There's lots of usability for that. So we're starting up the phone right now. But... the thing about the LG is they took away the app drawer because they wanted to uncomplicate Android for its users, which was kind of a bummer. It still has this knock code on it, so you have to
knock
eight times instead of four. So let's see if I can remember. It goes 1122. There we go. I have to remember the knock code.
What's wrong with a fingerprint reader? Is this in addition to the fingerprint reader?
It's in addition to the fingerprint reader.
But you, if once you've unlocked it the first time you... But no, so you don't have... How about the screen? Is it? It's a IPS LCD or is it a... It's not OLED, right?
It is an OLED.
Oh, it is an OLED.
It is an OLED, okay. Yes. Because it also has the always-on display, the same
Which
as the GS7.
Which I, by the way, love the always-on mm-hmm. display. I use that all mm-hmm. the time. It's always showing the time, the battery, the calendar. You can change. There's different ones. But it's usually a kind of scan. It's not mm-hmm. like all your notifications. Mm-hmm. But I love having that. And it has not hit the battery life at all. It's a good-looking screen.
It is. So, yeah, here you go. This is your non-app drawer life on
How
LG.
Do you get to the apps?
You just... I mean, they're all just
they're
hang
all just
out
there?
Here. Yeah. So this is actually a 5 grid. I just haven't filled out this side here, so it doesn't
so
look weird.
So you'll have to have a page side. For... Every app has to be on a page? Well, the good news is yeah. you can use Nova Launcher or something else,
you can,
right?
Well, you can enable it from the settings. You can okay. re-enable it on the G5. I haven't tried to do that yet. But it bothers me because yeah. my own personal use, I like my app drawer. I like things tucked away, you know, just right. like my house. No. I like things in a
well,
bookshelf.
Well, you see me.
Or,
I'm like
you know.
Mr. Widget. I have widgets everywhere. And then, yeah, and the apps I want, I either put them in folders or I put them in the app drawer.
That's the thing, though. If you add a widget to this thing, it's going to get so messy.
What are you going to do? Yeah, your it's apps, you're going to have 18 pages of apps. Well,
so,
but you can. This is the beauty of Android. You can always put a third-party
launcher. Be together,
launcher.
Not the same.
Be together,
I know it's
not
Google's
the same.
Mantra, but...
They're right.
It's a good one.
I have to say, I'm loving the S7. And I don't feel like the Samsung... Although, notice I'm using Nova Launcher, mm-hmm, not the Samsung mm-hmm. TouchWiz interface, but... Samsung barely gets in the way. Immediately disable S Voice. Immediately disable all the Samsung apps. LG G4, I really felt like I couldn't. I did not get into the software. It really bugged me a little bit.
Bit busy.
Yeah. So I'm not a Sammy guy particularly, but right now this is the phone to beat as far as I'm concerned. The Samsung S7. I'll be very interested mm-hmm. to see what the G5 mm-hmm. does. $799. We don't know yet.
We actually
have announced?
No idea. I don't have any finalized details from LG, so I don't want to speak.
But B&H April Fool's Day.
Yes, April Fool's
Supposedly.
Day.
Supposedly. Is that official or a rumor?
Android Central reported on it, so.
All right. Must be true. It's official. Thank you, Flo. I'm so glad you brought this along.
It's very cute.
I like the wallpaper's also pink.
Also,
and so is your...
Yeah, I know.
You're really
you
kind
tell?
Of coordinated
kind of
the,
like,
the
oh,
whole
yes,
thing.
Yes.
You did that on purpose, didn't you?
Not intentionally.
See, I wear every color on my shirt, so it'll match no matter what. There's something in here. Even on St. Patrick's Day, I always have something in here. I can't get pinched.
Nobody can pinch you, exactly.
No. How do you spell internet-connected personal assistant? Megan Maroney's Amazon Echo gives her a spelling test. Wow.
I am Megan Maroney, and I host Tech News Today and iOS Today. Here are a few things you can do with your Amazon Echo. If you need some spelling bee help, you can host a spelling bee in your own home. First, you have to enable the spelling bee skill in the Alexa app. Then say, launch spelling bee.
Welcome to spelling bee. I will ask you to spell a word, and then you will try to spell it for me. How many rounds would you like to play?
100.
I think that you said you wanted me to ask you 100 questions. That would be pretty intense. Please choose a game length between 1 and 50.
50.
Okay. I will ask you 50 questions. How do you spell vacant?
V-A-C-A-N-T.
That answer is correct. That's what I'm talking about.
If spelling bees are not your cup of tea, maybe you need help practicing your pickup lines. Enable the pickup lines skill in the Alexa app and then say, open pickup lines.
Here's your pickup line. Are you religious? Because you're the answer to all my prayers. Should I keep going or stop?
Keep going.
I've lost my phone number. Can I borrow yours? Need to keep going or stop?
Stop. I am Megan Maroney. I host Tech News Today and iOS Today. Back to you, Leo.
And we should explain that sound is not the Echo wake-up word, but we don't want to use that because we realize we're waking up people's Echoes everywhere. You know what they did, though? Amazon kind of messed us up because now Echo's one of the wake-up words. So even just to say the name of the product... is to wake up somebody's Echo. So I'm sorry. I apologize. But what are we going to call it? The Amazon... I mean, we got to call it something. Do you have an Echo?
Nope.
Not going to get one, it looks like.
Eh. It's okay. I like remotes.
We're going to talk... this is actually kind of a heavy subject.
Yes.
But in a little bit, we're going to talk with a game that... Imagine your child gets cancer. there is no, for a parent, no more horrific news, just terrifying. Well, that happened to a couple, Ryan and Amy Green. They're going to join us in a bit with the makers of a new game that will help you kind of live out this real-life situation. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to talk about that dragon cancer. But first, we continue with the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine.
All right, we continue on with
the ultimate VR gaming machine.
Hello, Ryan Shrout, our expert. Ryan's helping us build this for our Oculus Rift, which should be coming soon. Are you getting an Oculus Rift too, Ryan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I was on one of the Kickstarter backers.
Me too.
So
yeah, yeah.
I don't know when, but hopefully relatively soon.
They said by May. That's just about when we'll finish building this thing. And then I saw that I could get a Vive too. You know, they sold 15,000 Vives.
That's a lot.
In just the first few days. So I
did
a
pre-order that as
yeah,
well.
So. I think I'm going to have to get in line for that one.
Yeah.
So this would work for either. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it's going to be a great gaming machine anyway. So what have we done? This is episode 6. So we started with the CPU and motherboard. Those two kind of go hand in hand, an Intel processor and an Asus motherboard. We've added now the GPU. We're using the Strix GPU from Asus as well. We've added RAM to the device.
Mm-hmm.
I think the next would be the sound card.
This could be an interesting debate.
We don't really need one, do we?
That's generally my kind of recommendation to people these days, is that onboard audio is generally considered really, really good today.
What does this Asus motherboard have? This says Z170 Deluxe.
So I don't remember the name or the model.
Is it still like Realtek or who is it?
Yeah. You've got Realtek, you've got C-Media. Those are the different the brands that are still involved in that. But the codecs have gotten better. They've done better at isolating the PCB for lower noise and that type of stuff. Now, there's still benefits to getting external audio cards, but it's very much a niche, right? It used to be you had to have one, and now it's like if you have a specific use case for one.
Well, I'll give you one right off the bat. This is we decided to go with Asus again and the Strix Soar sound card. And I don't know if this is just advertising, but when I see 116 dB signal to noise ratio, that's really good.
Yeah.
That means this thing is going to be a quiet card with a lot of amplification. It does support 7.1 Dolby sound. You may or may not use that. But is it that much better than the onboard motherboard sound?
I mean, so it's going to be better in a couple of key areas, right? As you just mentioned, it's got the better signal-to-noise
ratio.
That's
awesome, yeah. It's also got a Saber DAC. The DAC is important. This is from ESS, the Saber DAC. A good digital-to-audio converter is important for high-resolution music.
Yep.
And I suppose that's true in a game, too.
It is. I mean, anywhere you can improve audio quality, you're gonna see the benefit from that. It also has a better headphone amp. Then it's
That's
got a
big.
600 ohm integrated headphone amp on this, right? So if you are an audiophile type person, you have a lot of high-end gear, this sound card would be able to drive it. An onboard sound card would not be able to do that.
Yeah, and getting it out off the motherboard, I have to think. I mean, a lot of times I say, well, get it out of the whole case, you know, get a USB DAC.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this is going to give us better performance, I would think, than a USB
DAC. I mean, it definitely will.
Yeah.
The one thing I will note is, you know, this is the Rift, the Oculus Rift has a DAC in it.
Oh, interesting.
Right? The headphones that come with it, even though I'm not a huge fan of the headphones themselves, they're fine, but that's kind of all they are, is they're fine.
Yeah.
They're USB connected. They're not analog connected, right? So when you have a USB connected device, you're kind of bypassing.
Yeah, we won't be using the sound card at all.
Right. But you'll be able to use this sound card if you choose to not use that integrated audio device. So
right.
You can take those headphones off the Rift. You can use your own headphones, and thus you can run them through this sound card.
That's important to note. This is not going to help us with the Oculus. This is not going to be a big part of the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine. But you know what? If I'm building a PC, a really nice PC, I want good audio out of it.
And it's $100, right?
And not expensive. It's beautiful, too. Look
at that. It is. Follows that Strix kind of owl theme. That's supposed to be the owl's eye there in the lower.
Is that what that is? Because it's just plastic. It's not
actually. It lights up.
Oh, it does?
Of course.
Oh, well. But
it's got LEDs in it.
Why you convinced me. Now we need this.
Yeah.
And let's look at the connectors. So we start with, this is the mic line in. I wouldn't use that, right? USB is always better for a mic line in, but you got it. Headphone jack. Then this is a kind of a unique connector called the box link. This is something that goes to something called a Strix box, which I don't know what that is, and we'll find out. But that would be used at a 5-1 or 7-1 setup. The Strix box sounds like it's a breakout box of some kind. It is a non-standard connector. Also, as we continue down, these are the four ports for the surround sound. So you've got front, rear, left and right on each of those, obviously. Center channel, that'll be probably a mono, although I guess you could have stereo center channel. And then the side channels for a 7-1 system. But that doubles as an optical connector as well. See, here's a little adapter that comes in the box, the Toslink adapter. And that gives you, so you can use the more traditional Toslink cable, you know, that weird kind of square cable. Or I'm seeing more and more of these kind of the mini jack optical cables that'll work too. So this is kind of a dual purpose analog for your side channels if you're using a 7-1 or optical if you want optical out. If you use optical out, obviously you're not using the DAC that came with this, and it's a pretty good DAC.
It's also interesting that the software that comes with this it's called Strix Sound Studio or Sonic Studio, and yeah. You know, some people like to use that type of stuff, some don't. It actually has some interesting features in there, and I will say this, having not directly tested it on this card, but it has compressor. It has gating capability.
Oh,
it has, obviously, it has an equalizer. It's got virtual surround. It's got virtual reverb. It has a feature called Sonic Radar Pro, which is an interesting idea in that it's an overlay that will run on top of your game. If you're playing a first-person shooter, and it gives you a radar around you, and it attempts to tell you what direction sounds are coming from.
Oh, interesting.
Visually.
Oh.
As opposed to just audibly.
Oh, that
now,
might
some
be
people
handy.
Consider that a cheat.
It
or
is
a
cheat. That's a cheat.
Whatever,
but okay. Hey, I'm going to take every advantage I can get. Well, there you go. There's our sound card. This is for the Ultimate Virtual Reality Gaming Machine, the Asus Strix Soar. And you said around $100?
All right. Yep, selling online for about
Does it
bucks.
Matter where I put this in? It's like this mini PCI Express thing, right? So there's three
it can
of
go
those.
In, it can go in the smaller slots or the larger ones. I would you know, I would kind of put it, you know, not right next to the GPU, right? So a little bit further down in the board.
So we're going to put the GPU maybe, well, that's going to go here, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
We'll put this down at this end.
Yeah.
Like this. All right. You know, I think I'm going to start screwing this stuff into the case for the next episode, because I think we're getting pretty close. All we have to do now is add storage, right? What else?
Yeah.
What else? Let's not forget the peripherals: the screen, the mouse, the keyboard, and someday soon an Oculus Rift VR helmet. Ryan Schrouts at PCPer.com. That's where all of this information is, and his hardware leaderboard. It's right there on the front page. HW leaderboard. They'll show you how to build. Four different machines, from the dream machine to the inexpensive machine and everything in between. He also is doing a series on the same thing we're doing, building the ultimate virtual reality gaming rig, and has lots of information there. Of course, the reviews are always fantastic. We may surprise you next week. I've got some ideas about storage, so make sure you tune in. All of these will be on YouTube as well. Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
I am excited. We're getting this close. Now I just need a headset. I'm going to start putting this. Next week, will we do the assembly next week? I'm going to tell my future self, put the I.O. board in first, because future self did not. And future self had to take the whole thing apart because I didn't put that in first. We'll show the beginnings of the assembly. We still got a ways to go. We got to get the water cooler in there. There's quite a bit more to do. Let's talk about something a little more serious in virtual reality gaming. It is a game, though, an indie game that was a finalist for the Independent Games Festival of Excellence in the category Narrative and Excellence in Audio, an honorable mention for grand prize. It's called That Dragon Cancer. Mm-hmm. You watched the documentary.
Twice?
Yeah. I tried to play the game many times, and
that's why I didn't. I'm sorry. That's why I didn't play the game, because the documentary just made me
sad.
Very
Joining us right now, Ryan and Amy Green, the makers of the game, and David Ossett and Malika Zuhali, the makers of the documentary. There they all are. Nice to see you all.
Hi, guys.
We also have Schlossen here, who's one of the co-creators of the game also.
Poor little Schlossen gets stuck in the back row there. Sorry, Schlossen. So how did this all start?
Do you want to start with how the game started?
Well, just the whole... Give us the genesis of the game and the doc. Does the documentary came first?
The game came first. So we had a son who had terminal cancer, but he lived much longer than the doctors expected him to live. So he was supposed to live maybe up to 4 more months, and he lived actually 3 more years after that.
Wow.
So, yeah, somewhere in the middle, we kind of realized that we had adjusted to living with and raising a child that was expected to die. And it gave us time to start to think artistically about how we could express what that's like to love a child that you know you're probably going to lose. And Ryan was a game maker, and he partnered with Josh Larson, and they talked about how they could communicate this process of raising a child with terminal cancer as a game.
What was your goal, Ryan? Were you trying to kind of share your experience so other people could experience it, to support other parents in your situation?
You know, I think if I'm being honest, I was hoping that we were documenting a miracle, you know, that we were being part of this story that was larger than us, and that Joel was still with us and Joel was beating every expectations. And so, I mean, I'm a video game designer, and Josh is a video game designer, and that's what we do. And so how we express ourselves is through the video game medium.
Right.
And so this was just the form that we could take to tell our story, to be journalists of our life. And that's what this was. You know, we thought we were telling one story, and unfortunately we were telling another story, and Joel passed away about an hour or about a year into development. And so, you know, there's the story I want to tell, but the story that was being told.
Right.
And the result is the story that was told through our life.
Did Joel know you were doing this?
He didn't. Although he died when he was the age of 5, the chemotherapy and radiation he got as part of his treatment really delayed him. So he developmentally was probably more like a 1-year-old. Mm-hmm. And so I don't even think he really knew that he had cancer.
Yeah.
Even. So he didn't know really that we were making the game or even that he was dying.
You did have 3 extra blessed years, which is, you know, you're very fortunate in that regard. But it's still, as a parent, I can't think of anything harder to go through. And I'm sure my reaction is not alone. This is a very difficult experience for myself.
Yeah. I mean, we're asking for a lot of trust from people to, like, go on this story with us. And I think that's the hardest thing is that it reflects... Our story is like a manifestation of the fear that all of us as parents have.
Yeah.
And all of us who potentially could be parents. And so I think asking people to face that fear and asking people to find beauty in the midst of suffering like this is a really tough thing to do. And our hope is that, you know, we wouldn't ask people to do it unless we believed that there was something beautiful to be found through sharing our story.
And I think we knew we were risking something by loving Joel as much as we did. As soon as he was terminal, you realized, like, oh, wow, like, the more we love him, the more we stand to lose.
Right.
And I think we know that for the people who play our game, if they're willing to invest in loving Joel, that's a risk for them. But the people who've played it really believe that it adds something to their life. It changes them. It makes them think about their relationships and value them more, kind of like it made us value our lives more.
The game is available for Mac and Windows on Steam. It's under $10, $9.89, and it's also available on Ouya and Forge TV. Let me talk to Malika and David, because you made a documentary, Thank You for Playing. How did you find out about all this?
We read a brief description of the video game on a website called Killscreen Daily. This just had a very brief summary of what Ryan and Josh were working on at the time, and I think just based on that, we were really intrigued by what making a game about this experience would be like, not only just what the game itself would look like, because we didn't come from a game development background necessarily, but we were just really curious as to how would the experience be to not only make a game like this and inject your personal experiences into this interactive form, but also how would that process impact the creators of a game like that? You know, what would the process look like to essentially take so much time and energy and put it into something as a creative endeavor and also as a healing endeavor?
Yeah.
And so we contacted Ryan and Josh and went out for a 4-day shoot in Colorado where they're based. And that was just the beginning of 18 months of filming.
You watched it twice.
I did. I watched it twice. I had heard about that dragon cancer through the game news field. And I was really curious, what were, you know, either those of you who worked on the movie or those of you who worked on the game, what were you hoping to have people feel when they were watching this movie? Because for me, I mean, I felt extremely devastated watching you guys go through this process, and I'm honestly struggling to find a way to put that into words, just because it's, I mean, I could sense the pain mm-hmm. through the movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for us, one thing that was, I mean, David just explained what we were intrigued by in terms of the fact that Ryan, Amy, and Josh were trying to kind of document a real life experience and a very profound real life experience in a medium that usually isn't associated with that kind of documentation at all. And so we were intrigued by that whole process they were involved in. But I think one thing we realized once we started filming and once it became clear that we were ourselves involved in a long-term project in filming with these guys is that in some ways our documentary had, you know, was part of a similar mission and goal that Ryan and Amy and Josh had, which was to start conversations around these topics of bereavement and grief and terminal illness in a way that, you know, in Western society at least, just doesn't usually happen. You know, like death and bereavement and terminal mm-hmm. illness tends to be something we keep very much in our private lives, and that it almost seems like it's taboo to speak about publicly. And so we were amazed by the fact that Ryan, Amy, and Josh had set out to kind of talk about this intensely personal experience in public. But we soon realized as we were working on this documentary that the documentary itself was also part of that process of, you know, starting these conversations around a topic that people don't, mm-hmm. you know, aren't accustomed to being brought face to face with. And so I think, with the film, we were really hoping to do that, and then also to kind of shed light on the fact that the video game medium is now a kind of serious artistic medium.
Yes.
People like
right.
this
right.
team are creating serious, profound artworks in it, in the same way you might write a novel or a poem or create or paint a painting. And so we were kind of interested in being able to document a turning point that seems to be happening in the gaming industry right now.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I wanted to actually ask a question about the game development. So, you know, I do believe the games are a form of art, and I'm very curious where the decision came to use this sort of polygonal art that is used in the game.
The faceless kind of characters.
Was there more beneath it? Were you trying to, I don't know, illustrate something? What was the choice behind to use, you know, polygonal mm-hmm. art for this game?
You know, exploring an art style that, okay, so to be frank, it was partly inspired by just my own limitations. I wanted to be part of the process.
Okay.
And so, you know, stepping into that role of artist, where I'm typically a programmer, I wanted to be something that people could connect with. Mm-hmm. Early prototypes or like early demos of the art were kind of creepy because I couldn't get there. And there's this idea of this uncanny valley in animation where the more realistic you try to get, if you're not able to get there, it looks kind of odd and creepy. And so if we took that back and took like a really strong art style, we found that we could be more expressionistic in our impressionism, you know, and so like taking a polygonal approach allowed us to all have a unified art style. But then also we found that when you don't put faces in, but you have a very strong soundtrack, a very wow. strong audio landscape, it makes the whole game look better and people fill in the blanks. And so what we found through sharing it is that people actually identified with us more. because they were able to insert their own experience into it.
Right.
Yeah, and I think lighting plays an important role as well. We tried to fill all of the environments with a lot of light and color, and it adds a softness to the polygonal style that allows it to not feel really harsh or jagged, but it's much more warm and inviting kind of feel to it.
Josh, did you do the art, or did you do, what was your role on the game?
Early on, helping establish the art direction, but also design and programming.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a lighting specialist named Ryan Cousins, and he really came in and he really brought a really nice theatrical feel to the lighting. I did a lot of the modeling, the sculpting of the piece, and then we also have a composer and another developer.
I think we've learned, especially because of Minecraft, that realism isn't necessarily always what you need to go for mm-hmm. in a game. In a game like this, which is so emotionally strong, I think it's interesting mm-hmm. to have this style, this more expressionistic style. It's just it's quite beautiful, and what it really does show gaming as an art. Tell me about the gameplay.
Well, the gameplay is a lot more like, say, Myst without the puzzles. One thing that we really wanted was to make this accessible to players. And early on when we tried to do dual stick type movement or free movement, it was just really difficult to navigate for non-gamers.
Right.
And so as we were anticipating where this could go, we wanted to make a 3D environment because that was important to me as far as the sense of immersion. But we also wanted the controls to be simple. And so we really wanted it to be something that you could just navigate with your mouse. And so that's why we took a kind of unconventional approach to 3D navigation in games. It's just to allow everybody to be able to play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so a player will kind of navigate the space and learn about Joel, learn about our family. And then there are little games that happen in the sort of magical realism space of the game. But I think whereas normally you might see the storyline there to sort of support the mechanic of the gameplay. In our game, any mechanics of gameplay are there just to support the storyline. Right. They're more like metaphor
right.
than
right.
they are the point of what's happening in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember watching the documentary, I saw that you had your sons record a lot of audio as part of the narrative. And I was curious, there were a couple scenes where I heard you mention that the boys were actually looking forward to recording. I hope I didn't misread that. But I'm curious to know if this is something that has sort of become a time capsule for your family.
Yeah.
This just very,
yeah.
like, difficult time. And if it's something that you still go through with your sons, who are still very young.
Yeah, it has been something that I felt like they were a little young to sort of maybe proactively handle their grief and decide like, oh, here's what I want to do with my grief and here's how I want to honor Joel. But they loved being a part of what we were doing. They loved that our family has made this game for Joel. And so, yeah, they recorded audio for the game. They actually drew pictures that are used in one part of the game. And they have gone through and played it. And, you know, they've played it a few times, enough times that once recently, our middle son, Isaac, was playing through the game and making jokes throughout the whole thing, like just sort of irreverent, like mm-hmm. silly sort of jokes. And it almost felt funny, but then I thought, oh, this is so much a part of his life that he can mm-hmm. be silly playing it. Mm-hmm. But then at the very end of the game, there's credits that show photos of Joel. So he was so funny, silly through the whole thing. And then he got to the credits and just cried. And Ryan came over and held him. And they watched the photos together and talked. And so I think the game has just been part of their life mm-hmm. in this season.
Yeah.
The reaction has been very strong. You raised $40,000 on Kickstarter 2 years ago. I know the filmmakers have also raised money on Kickstarter for the film. So clearly you've tapped into something. Sorry?
How much did you raise?
Yeah, we raised over $100,000.
I'm sorry, $100,000. $40,000 for the film. I got it switched around. So that's remarkable. I mean, that shows that you were doing something that people were, I think, great that you used Kickstarter because it really showed an interest in this.
Well, even more remarkable that the people that supported the Kickstarter also supported it with their own stories.
Yeah.
And so you'll see artwork in the game. You'll see messages from backers in the game. You'll see letters. So people have really, like, told their story through what we've done.
And so, yeah, Kickstarter-backed content in the game was sort of our way to show that, like, well, we can intimately tell the story of our one family. We can give sort of a glimpse of the fact that it affects so many more families and give them a chance to memorialize people they loved in this space.
Yeah, and a lot of people, critics and game players, reviews that we've seen on Steam, people say that the Kickstarter content that's in the game is actually their favorite part. Walking through the hallway and seeing over 150 cards help them realize that this one specific story is really applies to so many other things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm so thrilled that you could join us, and I'm also pleased that the game has been such a success there. I should add that you just put out a Linux version of this on Steam as well, so it's now Mac, Windows, Linux, Ouya, and if you can find out more at the website, which is thatdragoncancer.com. And the movie has already got a lot of attention. It premiered just March 18th, so yesterday, right? And you've been invited to film festivals. It's very exciting.
So the movie, you can find out more info about where you can see the film at thankyouforplayingfilm.com. It was actually released theatrically in New York and LA yesterday, and is going to be released on all digital platforms on March 29th, so it'll be very easy to watch online then.
Nice. So a couple of ways you can take this journey with Ryan and Amy and Josh, and thank you. I mean, it's really showing that this is an art form. I think you said that
Absolutely.
Right. That gaming isn't just about playing games. It can be about life and some serious subjects as well.
And I will say, I haven't been just credit to you all. I have not been so emotionally invested in something like game like this before, and I think it's incredible. And thank you guys for sharing your story with the world, because I think it's a beautiful story of life.
Ryan and Amy Green, Joel's parents, Josh Larson, one of the developers. We also thank you, David Ossett and Malika Zuhali, the filmmakers. The film is at thankyouforplayingfilm.com, and it is in theatrical release now in two cities, and I'm sure there'll be many ways to see it soon. And the game, thatdragoncancer.com, and you can get it right now on Steam. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate it. Wow. I think, you know, cancer has become such a part of our society and our lives, and we all know somebody who's gone through it. I think that it's in some ways cathartic for people to see the film and to play the game, because it's personal.
Absolutely.
For everybody now, right? Thank you, Florence, for backing me up on that. I think I could do it by myself. Let's take a break, and then we're going to go answer some mailbag questions. Liberty Madison also has a website pick for us. But first, let me talk a little bit about putting money aside for the future, whether it's your retirement, the kids' college fund, medical expenses. It's important to be saving. But the real question is, when you start saving, where do you put your money? If you're just putting it in a savings account, you might as well put it in the mattress, because there's no money to be made in savings these days. So you got to invest it. But how are you going to invest it? Are you going to spend the time, the energy to research it? Or more importantly, once you buy the funds and the bonds, are you going to continually watch your investments, reevaluate the investments, rebalance the investments? I don't know. Maybe. Well, let's hire an investment advisor. Somebody, a pro who does. You know, the pros are going to charge you a lot, between 1% and 3% of every dollar under management every year. There is a better way, though. Software that will manage your investments for you, never gets tired, watches constantly, is based on the best investment advice from some of the smartest advisors in the world. People like Burton Malkiel, who wrote The Random Walk Down Wall Street, and Charles D. Ellis, winning the Loser's Game. In fact, the team that put the software together has more than 200 years of investment experience, 16 investment books. It is the best practices, the best thinking encapsulated in the software. And then the software is constantly watching, constantly adjusting, doing things like tax loss harvesting to increase your return while minimizing your tax bill. It is a really great way to invest. And all of this, not for 1% or 2% or 3% of your money, but 1/4 of 1%. And there are never any hidden fees, transaction costs, that's it. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. You can go right now and find out at wealthfront.com/NSS. The portfolios on Wealthfront are based on something called modern portfolio theory. So they can adjust them, designed to fit your personal risk tolerance, but they're tax efficient. They're diversified. If you go to wealthfront.com/NSS, you can actually say what would answer some questions and then see a portfolio they would generate for you. That's free, but they're not going to bog you down with dozens of questions. They've really simplified the process so you can get investing sooner. About 90% of portfolios are not properly invested for the long term, not with Wealthfront. Their new portfolio review will actually take your existing portfolio, tell you how risky it is, how diversified it is, and what it's costing you, what fees are costing you, and it'll do that for free. So here's the deal. Go to wealthfront.com/NSS. Take advantage of the tools, read up, learn what they're doing. I think you'll be very impressed. We get so many good responses from our viewers who've told us they've used Wealthfront and love how it works. You can watch it, what it's doing every day. There's an app so you can see, or the dashboard on the website so you can see what they're doing, what they're buying and selling on your behalf. And this is really great. It's only $500 to get started. That's the minimum investment. But if you sign up at wealthfront.com/NSS, they'll manage the first $15,000 entirely free of charge for life. Not 0.25%, nothing. Wealthfront, this is the modern way to do it. It really is smart. Wealthfront.com/NSS. All right, Florence, Ion, and I are going to go on over, sit down, answer some viewer mail. Mm-hmm. But first, Liberty Madison, last week's co-host, with a website she just loves.
Hi, I'm Liberty Madison, that tech girl, and I've got a very interesting tip for you. The best social media tool for the non-UX UI designer. It's Canva. Check it out. You can create custom tools, memes, and posts for Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. All of your social media designer needs can be filled on Canva. It's a free tool. Just go to canva.com to check it out. And for more tech tips, be sure to follow me at Liberty Madison on Twitter.
Thank you, Liberty Madison, that tech girl at #thattechgirl.com. She knows how to work it. So we're going to answer our mailbag questions in a second. But before we do that, I want to show you. So tomorrow on Twit, who's going to be in studio tomorrow for Twit, Tanya?
Steve Kovac.
Alex Wilhelm.
And Ian Thompson.
So we thought, since we were just talking about this VR game, we'd play this game. So this is keep talking and nobody blows up, right? Something like that. And this is the manual. Keep talking and nobody explodes. So the idea is the one person, and we rotate, is wearing the VR helmet and seeing the bomb that we have to defuse. And everybody else has the bomb defusal manual. And it says, you know, you have to go to different pages. And oh, my gosh, we're going to play tomorrow. Come by if you want.
I know. That's why I'm getting sort of a jealous look on my face.
You know what I'll do? I'll leave this for you. You can play it on All About Android.
That would be fun. I'll bring my Gear VR on Tuesday. And
good idea.
We'll get to it.
Good idea. You would love this. We have a bunch of these manuals, so totally. It's awesome. Awesome game. All right, time for the mailbag. And here it comes. You know we call it the mailbag. It's gotten more elaborate down here. This is crazy. I don't know what this is.
There's blood on it, too. Oh, dear.
This looks like something from BattleBots. All right, the BattleBot bag. All right, I'm gonna give you... I don't know which one I should give you. This one.
Okay.
All right. Start us off.
Okay. This one is from Nathan.
Hi, Nathan.
Hello, Nathan. If I have Google Photos app syncing on my Android device and Google Photos uploader program syncing on my Windows laptop, does the service recognize the same picture and prevent duplicates even though the photos are organized into named folders on Windows and grouped by date on Android? The quick answer for that is yes.
Yes.
The second portion of the question, in using Google Photos syncing, do I organize and name folders online like I've done through Picasa in the past? Don't even worry about it. You're safe on that end. And the last part of the question, does Google Photos uploader leave the original full file on the desktop? It does, Nathan. And I got to tell you, I've been using Google Photos for years, so you are in good hands.
This is timely because they're phasing out Picasa. They're shutting it down soon, right?
They are. Picasa will be of the past.
Yeah.
Past Casa.
But Google Photos is great. Now, I think you can probably do some organization. There's albums.
Yes.
You can create one of the nice things. Collections.
Yes.
You can do shared albums, which is great.
I love shared albums.
We could say, Flo and I could say, let's share all the pictures from the show today, and we could have a shared album. Yep. She could add to it, and I could add to it. So even though there's, you know, one titular owner, we both can add to it. I love that. It does the categorization automatically, which is amazing.
It is. I love Google Photos.
So you don't have to, you know, say, well, I want all my pictures from, we took a trip to Mendocino. It knows.
Yep.
It puts all the pictures together.
And location.
I've never had a duplication. Oh, I have had a duplication problem. Wait a minute. Let me think about this. I have had a duplication problem. And the reason is, I uploaded pictures as when we were in Europe. We were traveling last year. I uploaded pictures as I was going because I didn't want to lose anything, which is a nice thing.
Right.
Every day, at the end of the day, I would copy my pictures not only to my laptop, but to my Android device. And overnight, it was slowly, because we were in Europe, upload.
Yes.
But then when I got home, I copied the pictures to my desktop. And here's why I think I had a problem, because I was uploading JPEGs, but then I had RAWs.
Yep.
I don't know, but for some reason I...
That sounds like a plausible...
You know what was awesome? Is I just deleted all the photos from that trip and let the desktop uploader re-upload them. So that was nice. Right. It doesn't change your organization on your desktop. It you could still have the RAW or the JPEGs on your desktop. But remember that unless you specifically check the box that says upload the full quality, the images getting uploaded to photos are reduced quality. Although, they look great to me. I don't notice anything. Right?
I just have everything uploaded, the high quality, the unlimited
storage. Oh, you check
storage.
That box because you have a lot of storage probably.
Yes.
You got terabytes. Every time you get a new phone, you get another 100 gigabytes.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, and being a phone reviewer, I've got a lot of gigabytes.
I'm a little bit myself, actually. I probably should do the originals. I don't. I should probably do the originals.
You never, and you know, on the duplicates part, at least you have doubles of everything.
Who cares?
So,
it's
I don't
not,
know.
It's part of this is, and I can see this in the email, moving from the old way, the desktop way, the Picasa way, you got folders, you did organization, you put a lot of effort into that, to this, just let it go. It's kind of like going from Quicken, the checkbook manager, where you enter in everything in, and you check, and you balance it, and it's a nice feeling at the end of it. It goes, ching, they match, the bank matches yours. And then you use Mint, and you don't ever enter in another transaction again. It just knows everything. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Let go and let Google. That's
let
my
go.
Motto. I got a letter. This is from Sean. My boy's about to turn 6, and he loves playing Android games. I wonder what games he plays. He's had a Navi tablet. I don't know that. Do you know Navi?
That's, I mean, it sounds familiar, but it sounds...
A lot of, you know, gas station tablets, $39.95.
Exactly. I like that. I like that category. I'm gonna steal that, by the way.
It's behind a fly spec piece of glass. Hey, tablet, $39.95. You want two? He inherited my wife's old Samsung tablet. Well, at least he's upgraded. Both have since broken. Oh, I'm sorry. Currently, he's playing on my old Note 2 phone. Well, that's practically a tablet for a kid, right? I want to get him a tablet loaded with his favorite games for his birthday. Doesn't need anything amazing. Just YouTube, Plants vs. Zombies 2, Red Ball 4, Minecraft, preferably 10 inches and around 125 or less. Obviously, it doesn't have to be a name brand. If it comes with crappy software, I'm fine with flashing vanilla Android. What about a Kindle?
I was actually thinking Kindle would be great. I mean, they have the free app deals, so you can do that with the Amazon App Store.
They have all these apps, I'm pretty sure.
It would be kind of a bummer if you've invested a lot of money in the Google Play Store, then
well,
you probably want to stick.
Sideload the Google Play Store onto a Kindle.
Can.
And Kindle is Android, it just doesn't look like Android. So you can install any game.
You can.
The other thing is they make a kid's, he said 6, this might be the thing, they make a kid's Kindle.
They do.
And it's, you know, it's like covered in rubber. And if you break it any time in the first 2 years, they replace it for free. So if your kid takes the thing and throws it across the room and it breaks, it doesn't matter. They're sending you a new one.
Games can be very agonizing, I understand.
I get to Plants vs. Zombies and those big guys. That
oh,
have little,
my God, they come after you.
And
yeah,
they have the wrench and they go boom, boom, boom.
Exactly. But with the kid's tablet, it's fine. Cause it
Who cares? It bounces off the wall, and if it doesn't?
Yeah.
Well, then you get another one.
Yeah.
So I don't have. Do you have a problem with Amazon tablet?
No, I think Amazon's great, especially for a kid.
There it is, $79.99. Yeah. Now that might be for a little kid, but he's only six.
Yeah.
They make a $59 tablet. I wouldn't recommend. That's too small too. It's 7 inches or maybe 8. They're 10 inches, a little more expensive than you quoted, about $150. Mm-hmm. There it is. That's the 10. Actually, that says $229. Don't they have one in the middle there? Maybe not.
Here's the bummer about the Android world right now. We don't even have a tablet scene anymore. It's kind of dominated by Samsung, but those tablets are the Galaxy Tab S2. It's too expensive for a kid, quite frankly.
And the Nexus 9 kind of
Nexus
died,
9
right?
is not there. If you watch the Android show, you'll see we're always talking smack about the Nexus 9 because it's just not the most stable thing. And, you know, you could go with something from Lenovo, but... No. Well, you're okay with flashing Kindle. Vanilla Android, so if you're okay with that. But Kindle, just get it. Yeah, plus, Amazon has such a great return policy.
Right.
So if something happens, you just call them up, and they'll
Whatever you do, unless you're made of money, don't look at the Pixel C. Yeah. I love the Pixel C, especially now with N on it. It's
tablet.
Got split screens, but that's a productivity tool, and it's really expensive.
Productivity tool.
We're not there yet.
I'm waiting for Android N. Google.
It's a great Minecraft PE tool. It's great for
And the rainbow lights on the back are very nice.
Very pretty.
Very pretty.
I really wonder what they're intending on that.
We will find out. Come Google I.O.
You think in June they're going to tell us, or May, when it's
I.O. We'll be at the shoreline on the lawn, and we'll be using our Pixel Cs to...
And you're going.
I am going.
And Jason's going.
Yes. We may camp out on the lawn. I don't know. I haven't convinced him to do that yet. We'll see.
Matt Cutts told us that the intent is the keynotes on the lawn at shoreline, but then you go into Google, which is just next door... for the presentations.
Interesting.
Now, I don't know. See, normally what they do is, at least what they've done in the past, the journalists can stay for the first thing, but that's Apple. Google lets you hang around, right?
Yeah, I go to the entire developer. I sit on sessions. I don't understand half of it, but it's great.
We'll have live coverage from Jason Howell and Florence Ion. And, of course, Florence is a regular on All About Android every Tuesday night, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time. It'd be round about, 2400 UTC. Midnight UTC.
I don't even know what time zone that is.
UTC? It's the magical time zone that never changes. It's a good show. Watch All About Android.
Please do.
Thank you. Anything else you want to plug? Your writing?
Yes, I am a writer for PC World and Greenbot.com. Write about all the things Android. Got a lot of stuff in the pipeline, so...
And anything else? You got a podcast? Everybody's got a podcast. You must have a podcast.
We have the PC World Cop podcast. We're not really on it anymore.
What?
Yeah, we're cycling people.
Hate them. Well, it's so nice to see you again.
It's
Thank
so
you
nice
for
to be here.
Back.
Thank
Come
you
back
for
anytime.
Me.
We love having you on
I
the show.
I love this living room. I really do.
I know. See? We
I
don't
told
use
you,
this
it reminds
enough.
Me of Mrs. Doubtfire's living room. At the end of the movie, it's the PBS segment, and
That's
the mailman
right.
comes in. Little puppet.
Oh, she's a very nice lady, Mrs. Doubtfire. So I tell you what we're going to do now. We're going to wrap this up, but you can be back here anytime you want.
Thank you.
All right, and I thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.